It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. When we talk about raising daughters, we often focus on how to prepare them for a world that can be unfair and even dangerous for them. Our guest wants to turn that narrative on its head. Instead of talking about making daughters stronger, he says we should talk about making dads better. Are you a father? What's your favorite thing about being a dad? How many kids do you have? What's it like raising a boy? What's it like raising a girl? Do you raise your kids differently, or do you try to raise them the same regardless of gender? Do you think sons and daughters need to be raised differently? Why and how? Share your story with us, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email is ideas@wpr.org, and you can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Mike Adamick is a writer, stay-at-home dad, and the author of several books on parenting, most recently Raising Empowered Daughters, a Dad-to-Dad Guide. Mike, thanks for joining us, and particularly thanks for joining us from the West Coast, where it's a lot earlier than it is where I'm sitting. Appreciate it.
I'm very excited to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
I'd like to start by having you tell us a story that you tell in your book. It's about a friend of yours who took her son and daughter and their friends to sell brochures at a football game to raise money for Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. Tell us what happened.
So this is really emblematic of how we treat boys and girls in society. And I think a lot of times I get the sense that men just don't realize it. We sort of pick apart the data of various topics about underrepresentation, but we don't necessarily have to carry the emotional weight of stories like these around with us in our everyday lives. So a friend of mine takes her daughter, who is 10 at the time, and her son, who is around 9, to a Texas football game to pass out some flyers for an event they were having. And she had her daughter and some of her daughter's friends in Girl Scout outfits or uniforms, and her son in a Cub Scout or a Boy Scout. I think it was a Cub Scout at the time. They're handing out flyers, and the boy gets praise and thanks, and people call him Mr., and they ask him about, you know, the special project he's working on, and they shake his hand, and they're just so grateful. Like, good job. We really appreciate you being out here. Two of the four girls were called the B word. They were sexually harassed by grown men. And she says that groups of men would come up to them and harass them and sort of crudely ask them, hey, do you want to be my girlfriend? And that type of thing. And it's really important to note here that only a couple of the men would actually say these things. And she noticed that the other men in the groups would sort of laugh it off and chuckle and maybe kind of stand there awkwardly. And those are the men that, you know, you're going to have the people that maybe are doing something, but the ones that kind of stand by and let it happen in front of them. I think we really need to have a talk among dads to say, we can do something better there. We can be the guy that laughs it off, or we can tell our friend Bob, hey, that's not cool. Stop. And so when I talk about raising empowered daughters and how much we really need to do that, the conversation isn't an either or, you know, only raise empowered daughters or be better men. We got to do both. We have to really raise strong, powerful daughters with voice. But we really have to call attention to the fact that sometimes we make their jobs and their lives a little harder as they grow up. And we can do something about that among ourselves.
You have one child, a daughter, who's now 13. When did you realize that sexism was going to be something you'd have to take into account as a parent?
Well, early on, I was raised by a single mom, and I saw her struggle. And I would really like to say that I woke up and realized that the sky is blue, and I lived in a patriarchy, and women often, you know, face obstacles that men like me don't. But there is something, I think, unique and special when men do have daughters, and they perhaps see the world in a way that they hadn't before. A sociologist, Michael Kimmel, who wrote a book called Guyland, talking about kind of violent forms of masculinity, says it's often a way in for dads to see that the world is tilted in a way that it isn't for them. And so that's a good way, I think, for a lot of dads to kind of enter the conversation and really see that girls are going to be treated a little bit differently, a lot differently often, just because of who they are. So, yeah, it's a great, I guess, way in for a lot of dads to see what's happening and, I hope, start to do something about it.
Do you think you would have considered all of this as much if you'd had a son?
That's a really great question, and I'd like to say yes, and I guess I would go back to the idea that I had seen kind of our narratives at work before then. But yeah, I would imagine that, you know, cultural bias would seep into me as well. It's the air we breathe. So,
that's really one of the challenges, isn't it? I mean, the prevailing culture that's been around for a long time and is really well established pervades pretty much every access or every aspect of our lives, our media, our day-to-day interactions with people, social media, motion pictures, television, radio, everything, what happens in our schools, it's everywhere. And so, you know, that just has to make this an even bigger challenge than it would. Raising children is a challenge to begin with. I have a close friend who used to refer to children as blessings in a perfect disguise. But, you know, raising children is always a challenge. What are some of the, what's the really big challenge here? Is it the fact that our culture is just everywhere in front of us?
That's such a great question, because if it is everywhere, it feels normal. It just feels like a thing that is, as opposed to something that is something we can fix and work on. And girls and women make up 51% of the population, and they're underrepresented in pretty much every field and segment of society that you can think of. In government, they make up roughly 24 to 25% of Congress, 23 or 24 in the House, and 25% in the Senate. State legislatures across the land, it's somewhere around 27%, which is the same as in Wisconsin. They hold 9 governorships out of 50. In business, it's high technology fields, Apple, Google, things like that. They represent maybe 30% of the workforce. In sports, it's interesting to think about the World Cup and how much wonderful media access these wonderful players are getting. It's just a great month for me, a huge soccer nut. But on the whole, women receive roughly 4% of sports coverage. And that's just sports. And when you look at movies, they're vastly underrepresented on the screen. And if they are shown, they're given far fewer lines and are sexually objectified in ways that men are not. So in online, and women report just obscene amounts of sexual harassment online and on the sidewalk and in the boardroom. And it's just the distillate dots seem innocuous if there's just one, but when they coalesce and form a whole, the blanket of oppression really is, it feels normal, but it's really not. And I'm hoping to call attention to that in the book for dads who maybe haven't seen it or felt it themselves, but kind of want to weigh into the conversation so they could do something about it. And I do argue that we have tremendous amounts of power to do something about it.
Mike Adamick is the author of Raising Empowered Daughters, a dad-to-dad guide. Dads, do you have daughters? What are the challenges of raising them? How is it different raising daughters and sons? Maybe you don't think it is. We invite your take on this at 800-642-1234, 800-642. Share your story with us. Our conversation will continue in just a moment. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. We're having a conversation about fathers and daughters and how to be a dad to a daughter in the 21st century with Mike Adamick, writer, stay-at-home dad, and author of several books on parenting, most recently Raising Empowered Daughters, a Dad-to-Dad Guide. We have some callers who want to join the discussion. Let's start in Madison, where Dara is with us. Dara, good morning. Welcome to the morning show.
Thank you. So I just wanted to say I work at a daycare and I teach karate. I'm a college student, and I definitely feel like we treat, boys and girls very differently. I think the other thing is that I think us women are trying to, prepare the girls for some of the violence and things that they are most likely to experience as they get older.
Dara, thanks for sharing that. Mike Adamick, what do you say to what Dara had to say there?
I as a dad too, it's one of those. There's a story in my book. I think about karate in particular and being on the sidelines with a soccer dad who was raising four daughters, and he enrolled each of them in a martial arts class, and he looked at me, and he said, "They need to know." I said, "Oh, yeah, that's great." And he said, "No, they need to know." So I always find it interesting that we raise just the environment that we feel as if it's normal. We raise daughters to learn karate, to learn martial arts. We tell them to hold their keys in their hand when they walk to the car, to not leave a drink unattended at a bar when they're out with their buddies, to text their friends, "Hey, I made it home." It's a simple thing that I never had to experience as a young man. And why do we do this? Because there's an expectation that they're unsafe, that on some level they're going to be hurt violently, sexually assaulted. Something's going to happen to them. And we have to ask, who's going to do this? By and large, we know it's going to be men or boys. The statistics for sexual assault, I think it's 1 in 6 women throughout their lifetime will be survivors of attempted or completed rape, versus I think it's 1 in 33 for men. And they're both bad, horrible situations. But we do have to take into account that we live in this culture where we raise girls to defend themselves, and we tell boys that they're violent and that they should suppress their emotions and man up and be real men. And the consequences of that for boys growing up is they don't have the vocabulary to express emotions or the freedom to feel just the real, full emotional selves. Everyone feels anger. We're human beings. We've got fear and sadness and worry and depression. And oftentimes we don't allow boys access to the vocabulary to express this, or just the comfort and warmth and the environment to express that. And what happens when they grow up is they don't know how to express it, and they turn that bottled rage on themselves. The suicide rates for men, 70% of suicides are by men, and white men in particular, as they grow into middle age and into adulthood, middle age, and into their elderly years, are killing themselves at just obscene numbers. But when they're not turning their violence on ourselves, we're turning it very much on the people we've always told them are lesser or are objects, or we hit them because we like them, is a message I think many girls have been told in elementary school. And that sort of casts the template going forward. So yeah, that environment of raising girls to defend themselves because we know what they're up against, I don't think we should raise empowered daughters alone to face that. We dads really need to have a talk with ourselves to say, what can we do to help? Help our daughters, help our sons. That's a conversation we really need to have amongst ourselves.
Dara, thanks for that call. Callers, a line for you right now at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Dads, what have you learned most from having a daughter? What surprised you most? Daughters, how would you describe your relationship with your dad? How important is he in your life? Do you feel more empowered because of him? What are the greatest lessons that your father taught you? And how do you plan to pass that on to your future children? Share your story with us at 800-642-1234. The difficulties raising children, raising daughters specifically in the 21st century, start early on. You talk about going clothes shopping for your daughter when she was a baby, and now as she's growing up. Tell us about your experiences shopping for clothing.
Well, I actually used to sew some of the clothes for my daughter, and I would always love to make dresses or little jumpsuits for her, and she's 13 now, so when I think about you know, sewing clothes for her and her reaction today to wearing something dad sews. It's just, it brings back some good memories and makes me laugh to think she would say, yeah, dad, I'm not wearing that. So when we go clothes shopping, I would always notice in basically any major retailer, Target or Walmart or H&M, that these little dots of oppression really start so early and they come so often. And clothes, I think, is a very good example that is one of the first that we see as parents. We start to notice that the selections for girls are kind of flowery and sweet and cupcakey, and they're really kind of slimming and constricting. I mean, take a look at the sleeves. You know, they go up, and anyone that's like, I got to apply more sunscreen now. Thanks, clothes. The clothes selections for boys are roomier. They're made for movement. And what I found really interesting in examining clothes stores is that there were disproportionately more shirts with like logos on them that express some interest in college, in education. In fact, I did a study of kind of a non-scientific study, I'll say, just a perusal of online sites to see how many college logo shirts were available for boys. And it was something like dozens of college shirts were available for boys, and there were zero for girls. And you might think, well, that's a small thing, but those are the messages we get as girls grow older, that they can't wear certain clothes in school because they're going to become a distraction for boys. So we have to send the girls home because we don't want to ruin a boy's education. So these dots add up and say, ultimately, like, who are we building society for? Who, when it comes to education, do we have in mind? And it wasn't just me. There was a great analysis done that I point out in the book that even the little animals that we put on clothes for girls and boys, a couple in Britain created an algorithm to examine those logos, and they found that boys' shirts in the boys' aisles had predator images on them by and large, bears and wolves, and imagine a big scary predator, a T-Rex. And girls always had what they would consider prey animals, kittens or rabbits or birds and things like that. So it's just so odd and somewhat kind of morbid, chuckle-inducing to think that we've even gendered animals. You know, boys have to like the predator ones, and girls, you know, here's your prey shirts. And what are the messages those send? You know, if it was just one shirt, well, that would be great. We'd just laugh it off and move on. But it's never just one shirt. These things don't exist in a vacuum. They're parts of a omnipresent messaging system that says, oh, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I just wanted to take another call here before we get to our news break. Marcus is with us in Milwaukee. Marcus, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. So I am a father of four children. Three of them are interracial, and of those three, two of them are girls. My oldest also happens to be 13. And there is such a thing we have to understand as white privilege. And as fathers, we need to understand that for a long time, the things have been stacked in our favor because we've been born male, been born white. And I think it's really time now for us to refocus, because if this is the first time that this is kind of coming to a point of being addressed, I think as fathers, we're remiss. And we need to understand that when strong fathers raise daughters to be strong, we will end up with women that are strong, that will help create better men and thus better fathers raising stronger daughters. And we need to just do this, and we need to understand that this is our responsibility as fathers, and it's why we're here.
Marcus, thanks so much for sharing that with us. Mike Adamick?
Marcus, I wanted to give you a hug. I love you, man. I don't know how to amplify that any better other than to point out that for a lot of people, maybe that's not their story. They don't see it as Marcus does, and so maybe they just don't believe it. It doesn't exist. Or they think, you know, hey, I'm not sexist or I'm not racist, therefore it's not a problem for me. But it's not enough to not be those things. You don't get a gold star for being baseline decent. You have to be anti-racist. You have to be anti-sexist. If you're such a good guy and you're not those things, do something about it. So I really want to kind of hold space for a lot of the things that Marcus said there, because it's so true. And I point out that it has health effects, just damaging health effects. This idea that we're throwing girls and boys into this sexist and racist society. And researchers call it weathering when, it goes back to double consciousness with W.E.B. Du Bois. I would go to a grocery store and I'm just perusing grapes and, you know, maybe opening a bag of chips because I'm hungry. That's not an experience for people of color in America. They have to have the thought of how are they perceived? Are they going to be followed around by security? Are they going to, you know, they can't open the bag of potato chips because they're hungry because they very well might, you know, have the police called on them. And it's not my experience, but it doesn't mean it doesn't happen.
Mike Adamek is the author of Raising Empowered Daughters, A Dad-to-Dad Guide. Our conversation with Mike continues after the news. You can share your questions, thoughts, and ideas about parenting in the 21st century at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson and for Kate Archer Kent. When we talk about raising daughters, we often focus on how to prepare them for a world that can be unfair or even dangerous. Our guest wants to turn that narrative on its head. Instead of talking about making our daughters stronger, he says we should be talking about making dads better. And that's what we have been doing this morning on the Ideas Network. If you're a father, what's your favorite part about being a dad? How many kids do you have? What's it like raising a boy as opposed to raising a girl? Or do you not raise your kids differently? Maybe you try to raise them the same regardless of gender. Share your story with us at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org is the email address. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's take a couple of calls to start this segment. Kelly and Nina, you'll be first. Kelly, good morning. Welcome to the morning show.
Good morning. So I am a single child, and my father always taught me that I can go to college, I can go enter a trade, I can do whatever I want. And he always asked me when I was a kid, do you want to join a sport? Do you want to go craft? He tried to, I guess, not consider my gender, right? Because I was his only kid. He was never going to get a son. So I guess it was nice that he gave me those opportunities and instilled in me that I'm worth it. And whatever I want to do is worth it. And I actually work in the car industry now. So I'd like to say that that's thanks to him for letting me know I can do what I want, including mostly a man-operated field.
Kelly, thanks so much for sharing your story with us. Let's go next to Danica in Madison. Danica, good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us your story.
So I will start off. I am a biracial, bisexual, queer, first generation married to an immigrant woman, and I was raised by multiple father figures. And I just want to my father was very young. He has four daughters by the time he was like 21 or 22, and we're kind of the Cinderella story of, you know, teenage pregnancies and everything else. My dad, we got out of poverty, and I never grew up thinking, oh, I'm poor. You know, I grew up thinking, oh, wow, like, I have this wonderful father and family in general. My mother's awesome, too. And all of my father figures kind of combined taught me everything that I know. They gave me a good work ethic. I learned theater. I learned outdoors. I learned circus arts and everything else, and I wouldn't be who I am today without them. I just when you talk about raising strong daughters and whatnot, I just have to talk about how not only do I feel strength in everything that I do, but in my sisters as well. All of them are going out to be fantastic young women, including my youngest sister, who's 13, and she's already, you know, video editing and making music. She plays three different instruments, and none of it was forced on us. You know, I told my dad that I had a different political view than him, and he said, well, explain it to me. He didn't say, oh, that's wrong. He said, explain it to me. Prove your point. So it was never, you know, think this way, think that. It's like, find the answers and back up your opinion and that kind of thing. And now I am in a great career, married to a wonderful man, and I just can't think that if I didn't have the fathers that I did, it would have been so much different.
Mm-hmm. Danica, thanks for your sharing your story. But Kelly and Danica, there are a couple of stories about their relationships with their fathers. Mike Adamek, anything to react to there?
Other than it just really warms my heart. It's so great to hear that. And it's really, it resonates for me in particular because I am involved in a lot of dad groups who do exactly that. And so I see that in my dad groups and I hear stories like that. And it just warms my heart. And I also have to hold at the same time that for many girls and many boys, that's just not the case. And that's sad. So it's really nice to know that those conversations are out there. I'll circle back around to it if you've got a second. It reminds me of the Good Place, the TV show. There's a character, Tahani Al-Jamil, who's constantly name dropping people. You know, I was talking to Oprah on Bill Gates's yacht as we were going to Ellen's birthday party, and she said, well, this is my time to name drop. I was in New York the other day talking with Malala's dad on a panel, and what struck me is how I can see some common threads between Danica's story and Malala's dad's story. You know, before the Nobel Prize, before the international fame, before the Malala Fund, he was just a simple dad who woke up and saw patriarchy at work in Pakistan and wanted to do something about it. And the first thing he did is listen in his own family, made space for his sons and his daughters, which was not a thing that everyone did in his own family. And I was really struck by that simple act of making space to listen and encourage and provide that warm, comfortable environment, which is what I call on dads to do in my book. So girls can find their voice and find their grit and become, you know, world beaters. That's what we want. And I'm thinking of the foreword in Malala's dad's book, Ziauddin's book. And Malala herself says, my father made me realize that my voice was powerful and that it was important. I think that's something we all want to do. And I just really hope that we can have conversations among men and among dads to make sure we're doing that. Because stories like Danica's and stories like Kelly, that it just warms my heart. That's what we want.
One of the things that Danica said that I wanted to circle back to as well was that she had multiple father figures in her life. I guess it suggests the idea that all men are dads to daughters at some point, because we all portray men to everybody we meet. Is that a stretch, or would you agree with that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, I think of Hillary Clinton's book. It's The Village. You know,
yeah,
and it's usually caretaking is thought of as a woman's role, but certainly we've got a huge responsibility to do that. And I think if it's caring, warm dads in my community who are helping raise my own daughter. So yeah, I definitely see that.
You have a whole chapter in your book about boys and how sexism affects them too. Can you tell us about the first time you heard the phrase "boys will be boys" and how it made you feel in that moment?
Well, when it wasn't applied to me for anything, and it seems like an innocuous phrase, and I get that. You know, it's like if we can cure one, you know, get rid of one phrase, that's not going to solve all our problems. But what I really hold space for is the idea that often we trot that phrase out when boys are doing something dangerous or violent or, you know, quote unquote bad. We excuse it away with "boys will be boys," saying boys just can't help it, and those messages add up as they grow older, and that's just not okay. Let's not use gender expression as an excuse for doing something bad. Everyone's going to mess up. Everyone's going to do something violent, dangerous, and stupid. Let's just not use gender expression as an excuse for that's why they do it. Just say, hey, don't do that. I remember thinking about the first experience I had as at a playground. My daughter was, you know, under a year at that age, and she's just kind of munching on sand and having a great time. And there's a boy a few years older than her, old enough to, I would think at that age, having a daughter who was growing to know better at the time, kind of looked at her, did a double take, and just threw sand, a huge pile of sand, right in her eyes. And the mom who was nearby picks him up and says, hey, you know, don't do that, and looks at me within earshot of the boy and says, boys will be boys. And all I can think was just, that's it? Like, it's over? And I didn't want to, obviously, you know, draw blood at the moment, but it just always drives me batty when we use, gender or sex as an idea that they just can't help it. Again, if we just get rid of this one phrase, it's not going to solve our problems, but let's just kind of hold that in our consciousness that oftentimes we use that as an excuse for bad behavior. We never say like, you know, hey, boys baking a cupcake today, which is something boys do. You know, boys will be boys. No, usually it's around a violent situation. That's not okay.
Let's take another call. Anne is with us in Wanakee. Anne, good morning. Welcome good morning. To the morning show.
Thank you. My husband and I are raising boy-girl twins. And he's a great dad. He's got, you know, two levels of what's going on that I think is really going to empower both our kids. You know, first of all, we're raising them both to, you know, do a lot of the same things, whether it's considered, you know, male tasks or female tasks. They both do all of it, and we're encouraging that. The other thing is living by example. I was raised by parents that told me I could do anything I wanted, and I didn't set out to make a point to anybody, but I traditionally found myself going into very male-dominated things, glass-blowing, professional stagehand, volunteer firefighting, and my husband has unconditionally supported me in all those things. So not only are we teaching our children that you can be what you want, but we're also living that example. My doing what I love to do, he encouraging me and supporting me in those things. So I think it's a multi-level learning experience for both the boy and the girl. And I think he's doing a great job.
And thanks thanks for sharing that, Mike.
I think of two things immediately, Anne. The walk in the walk and talk in the talk. There's a story in my book about from a woman who is told all along that she's important and she's powerful and girls can do anything. And she'd overhear her dad on poker nights talking with his buddies, just demeaning women and telling the most sexist jokes. And I just think that the stories that, you know, she would hear, she grew up feeling really conflicted. Well, is that what my dad really feels about me? Is that how men are going to view me? I think of the kids today who are raised by parents who kind of make excuses for why they would vote for a person who brags about sexual assault. And not just brags about it, has almost two dozen women come forward to say, oh yeah, he totally did all those things he bragged about. He did those to me. So we really do have to walk the walk in addition to talking the talk. And I'd also kind of urge that we degender activities. I think of male activities, female activities. These are just things when you grow up, these are things grown-ups do.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break. Our conversation with Mike Adamick, the author of Raising Empowered Daughters, Dad to Dad Guide. That conversation continues in a moment. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. Father's Day is Sunday, and we're talking about being dads today, specifically being dads to daughters, with Mike Adamick, the author of Raising Empowered Daughters, A Dad to Dad Guide. Mike, you talk about a lot of big issues in your book that on the surface seem almost unrelated to parenting, things like having a female president and more women in Congress, abortion, the equal pay gap. How does your awareness of these big issues affect you as a parent?
When you really just start to see that it's not one thing or one segment of society where girls are underrepresented, whether it's in business or government or in the idea that we can gather together over keyboards and talk kind of casually about what rights women should have. And then those conversations kind of pave the way for state legislatures across the land getting together. And remember, these are predominantly male state legislatures at the moment, 75% in most places, get together and actually vote on which basic human rights women can have. And I get that there are reasons, and they think there are very good reasons, but they still do it. They say, let's cast a vote on what women can do or not do with their bodies. And when you start to see that it's not just one thing and that the narratives are just widespread and omnipresent, it really makes it incumbent upon dads to raise daughters and sons who are going to help break it down, but then play a part as well. It's not enough just to do one. We have to do both. And that's something I'm really hoping dads join me on.
You talk about the term dad wave of feminism. What does a dad wave of feminism, if I can even say it, mean to you in practice in everyday life? People listening may be wondering, how am I supposed to fix these problems?
I love that question so much, because it often feels as if we don't all have big social media platforms. You know, we don't all have the bully pulpit of the president, or we're not all Hollywood stars. And it just feels like there's so many issues and we just don't have so much power. And I think of sociologist Alan Johnson. He wrote The Gender Knot. He really took a dive into what the patriarchy means. And he says we all live in it. I think of Shakespeare's, you know, all the world's a stage, where but actors in it. We don't have a choice of living in the patriarchy. That's just how our society is set up. But we can shift it a little bit. We can decide just to go along, or we can push it in a different direction. So we have power in our everyday social circles. I can imagine the dad who's not actually walking the walk that he talks, who says girls can do anything, but then, you know, tells us really horrible sexist jokes or demeans women's or votes for sexual predators, that type of thing. We have power in our social circles to make those circles better. And this sounds like a kind of San Francisco hippie thing to say, and it reminds me of Arlo Guthrie. But if just one person does that, that social circle is better. And then if two dads do that, two social circles are better. And it's just one, it's maybe a little crazy, but at 50, it's a movement. And so I'm really urging dads to do our part to walk the walk and change our social circles for the better, in the hope that one day they might overlap.
So you have hope then that we can change this?
I do have hope. And certainly there's an idea that, you know, we're in the transition, right? We used to hold women as slaves, breed them, rape them for economic gain. We don't do that anymore. We certainly still do disenfranchise women, especially women of color across the country. So we're in a period of transition. And I don't know how it would go on living without the idea that we do have hope to change this. We're not there yet. And it was Rebecca Traister said, you know what, we're going to probably die. And it's true, before it does change and we do reach a land of equality and representation, but equality in like sidewalk safety. But you got to do the work. You got to have those tough conversations, especially with your male buddies.
As a parent, I just want, before we close here, as a parent, what was the biggest surprise that you've had so far as a dad?
The sleeplessness. I knew it would be bad. I didn't know it would be that bad.
Roger that. Thank you so much for joining us, Mike Adamek. I really appreciate your time this morning, especially since you're on the West Coast and here we are in the Midwest. I really appreciate it.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much. And I'm just really, I want to hold in my heart how special it is to have a conversation where callers call in and make space for our LGBTQ friends. And I'm just really appreciative of that. Thank you.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a cool place. Mike Adamek is the author of Raising Empowered Daughters, a dad-to-dad guide. The Wausau YMCA hopes the addition of a new senior center will help its members expand their definition of wellness. The center will add social and educational gatherings for older adult members. As Wisconsin's population ages, it could be a sign of things to come. Rob Menser reports.
The 8 a.m. Silver Sneakers class at the Woodson YMCA is getting a workout. It's a class designed for seniors, and it's only open to those who are Medicare eligible. For 45 minutes, 30 or so men and women do aerobics on the gym floor, sometimes using chairs next to them for balance. Then, when it's time for the class to cool down and relax, this happens. That's the sound of a massive construction project that's going on just outside the gym. It's part of a $21 million expansion of the downtown Wausau facility. And a big part of that expansion is the creation of a new senior center.
Boy, I just saw the cement truck was here pouring something earlier this morning.
Construction crews are hard at work as Brian Bailey gives a tour of the center, which will be called The Landing. He's the YMCA's executive director.
This is technically
the new entrance is where you'll come in right through here.
Bailey says the Y has programs for all ages, but older adults are its fastest growing group.
We've seen the trend, as I said, in the last 2 years, our 55 and older population is really starting to grow by leaps and bounds.
That's why they're building a place just for those members. Besides exercise equipment, it will offer seniors social events, field trips, card games, book clubs, and a technology center. The YMCA is a private nonprofit, and the expansion, including the senior center, is funded entirely by local donors and foundations. But it addresses a public problem, and one that's not limited to Wausau. Wisconsin's population is getting older, and that's especially true outside its large urban centers. According to state projections, the population of those 55 and older will grow from about 1.5 million people in 2010 to nearly 2.3 million in 2040. They'll be more than one-third of the state's population. In some Northwoods counties, more than half. The aging population could mean far-reaching changes to Wisconsin's economy and its politics. It also presents some real health challenges. Dr. Amy Kind is a physician and PhD researcher in geriatrics with the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She studies the way people's environment affects their well-being. She says she loves to see organizations investing in infrastructure that can bring people together.
Staying physically active, staying socially active, and staying cognitively active are absolutely fundamentally important.
At Wausau's YMCA, they created a new position 3 years ago to help foster those connections.
My name is Becky Salent, and I am the current active older adults director at the Woodson YMCA.
Salent is 62. She has 6 kids and is a former high school French teacher.
I have earned this hair color. That's what I can say.
She said she's seen how senior members value getting involved in programs that offer social support.
I heard a new member talking to an even newer member saying, oh, you should go to this class. They're so nice. You know, it's a good workout. And they are helping spread that news.
And for Bailey, that sense of belonging is a big part of the point.
So it gives someone an opportunity to just have a place to say, this is my place. I belong to it. You know, this is where I'm going. This is where I know on a daily basis. I'm going to go have my cup of coffee. I'm going to find out who's doing what and catching up. And people need that.
For a lot of Wisconsinites, aging looks different today than it did a generation ago. Part of that is due to medical advances, but part of it is a growing appreciation that social connections matter to our health, no matter how old we are. Rob Menser, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up on this week's edition of Wisconsin Weekend, we visit a few parts of the state to learn about upcoming music festivals, and we learn about some new venues to hear live music around Wisconsin. That's all coming up next. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.